This is episode 123 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, your host, and that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world every single week. If you haven't already, make sure to join the Variety Arts Community Facebook group. There's Free For All Fridays, where you can promote yourself any way you like, and Marketing Monday. The first Monday of every month, you can post your toughest marketing challenges, and someone there will answer. All sorts of cool things. Check it out. Now on with the show.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
Combining traditional Japanese theater, music, origami, magic, and storytelling, my guest today is a master of his craft. He's the founding artistic director of Bento Rakugo, which toured all six Hawaiian islands. Variety artist, I give you Yasu Ishida.
Konnichiwa. Hi, everyone.
How you doing, Yasu?
Good. How are you, John?
Good, good. I heard you had a busy week with Kadabra. You were at Kadabra?
Yes, I was doing a panel of the Kadabra, and then I was in the panel with Carissa Hendricks, Ken Scott, Barry Mitchell, Chad Jacob, Chef Banana, and we talked about the virtual shows, their equipment. Yeah, it was fun. I was watching other kids' entertainer. It was so much fun to get connected to other kids' entertainers because I always love Kadabra because, you know, I get to learn with them and then, you know, I get to learn, grow with them and then get to see them, you know, hang out.
In fact, you and I met live. I mean, we kind of knew each other through Facebook, but we met live last year at CAX.
Right. That's right. That's right. That's, I feel like that was such a long time ago.
It seems like it. Now CAX, for those that don't know, it's the Kadabra kind of West Coast, California version.
It's so much fun. I feel like the atmosphere of CAX and Kadabra, you know, is a little different, but CAX is so intimate with people.
Now, when did you come to the U.S.?
I came to 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I came as an exchange student. And first, I was doing a exchange student at the University of Wisconsin.
Oh.
I was there for 1.5 years. And then I came back to Japanese Junior College. And then I graduated Junior College. And then I transferred to Minnesota State University because I love the Midwest so much. I studied theater in undergrad. I graduated from college, so I got 1 year working visa. So I moved to California. I lived 3 minutes away from Castle.
The Magic Castle.
Yes, Magic Castle, yes.
The only castle we have here in California.
Yeah. And then I stayed there for a year, and I went back to Japan. I worked as a magician, and I wanted to come back. So I went to grad school in Hawaii. I stayed there for 3 years, and I graduated, moved to South.
At South, what does it say it again?
Yes. So the first I went to South of Florida. I was doing like assisting my dream storyteller.
Mm.
Name is Kuniko Yamamoto. And she's really like a Japanese storyteller to tell stories with magic, origami, basically what I do. I wanted to learn from her. So she was making a studio, origami studio at that time. I was helping her, but she helped me, like she had me for assistant for her show, brought me to, you know, National Storytelling Festival where she performs, or like lots of venues. I worked for her for maybe 2.5 years, something like that. And then I moved to South Carolina.
Right. Well, now we're going to get a lot into the origami and the storytelling, but before we do that, I understand that you came to the U.S. and did a lot of hospital clowning.
Mm.
Is that right?
That's what I wanted to do. The reason I wanted to come to United States was when I saw a movie called Patch Adams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the people who don't know Patch Adams, it's a Robin Williams played real young man whose name is Patch Adams. He's a medical student. He's becoming a doctor, but he wants to connect with people. So he goes to, while he was a medical student, he goes to like hospitals to dress like a clown to connect with kids and then kids from elders to connect to people. that movie, when I saw it, I thought, this is what I want to do, you know, using a performance as a tool to make a difference in people's life. That's why I came to United States. I apply exchange program where I can study English, but also performance. So I got into the theater department and in Wisconsin. Yeah, that's how my American journey started.
Oh, do you have any stories about lives that you've changed doing the hospital clowning?
Yeah. When I was the University of Hawaii in the graduate school, I helped my MFA friend's graduation project, the senior project. Mm-hmm. She did bringing a drama to hospital. So we visited a couple children hospital in Hawaii, and then I did magic show. I went back maybe a couple times after that. I did the rope trick, actually, Professor Nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know about this, but a girl who helped me didn't have the right hand.
Oh.
And I wanted to her to have that, the knot, but then I didn't realize she didn't have the right hand. So I was very embarrassed, but like I was like, hey, and then tried to connect with them, and but it ended up all right, but it was really surprising to just like, oh, yeah, I really had a great time connecting with kids in the hospital, because that's what brought us to United States, you know.
Is it after that that you started doing the storytelling with your idol? Or
yes, actually, I started in the undergrad. When I was an undergrad, I saw Kuniko Yamamoto perform on the Japan Festival in Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, you know, I wanted to be magician. Like I was doing like lots of difficult manipulation tricks. You know, I did the card manipulation. I was doing like a ball manipulation, double shell, triple shell. I really wanted to be technical magician, like, you know, David Copperfield or someone who does like so much of difficult stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I saw Kuniko's show, I just was surprised how magical her show was. And I felt at that time, there's more magical show than magic show itself.
Uh-huh.
That was storytelling to me, how she was authentic and how she was doing artistic work, her voice coming out authentically through her storytelling. And she also do magic, but not lots of it. All of her stuff is so unique, so artistic. I was just so moved. The first time I saw her show, I was so impressed that I went to the backstage. And without introducing myself, I was so excited. I said, could you take me as your apprentice, please? I asked to her, and she was like, she politely said no, but she has been mentoring since then. So that's, I think, my start of the storytelling journey. It's more about how to like connect with inner soul.
And is that what you're attempting to do? Or that's what you're doing, actually?
Well, that's what I want to do. That's where I want to get to as an artist and a performer. I want to create something that, you know, my artistic voice comes out, and then I can show that through the medium of magic when it's appropriate, or storytelling if it fits more in the storytelling. But I just want to create magical performance. So whatever form that strengthens that message is the tools I want to use.
Do you remember incorporating magic or origami in your first storytelling gig?
It's called the storygami, the form itself. That as the story goes, origami's shape changes, and then, you know, the origami shapes either becomes action or setting or over the story. So it's kind of point of story you're following, the shape changes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I use the Japanese folktale Princess Kaguya, which is a bamboo princess.
Which is what, bamboo princess?
Yeah, bamboo princess. Mm-hmm. Princess Kaguya, Japanese folktale. And then I used the big origami to follow that story with the shape. Yeah, that was, I think, my first.
Now, when I first saw you at CAX, mm-hmm. we were talking a lot about storytelling. Yeah. Are there certain steps that we can follow to create a story?
You know what? I think there's 100 storytellers, there's 100 methods. But for me, it's about knowing about the moment. I try to work from the moment, that like magical moment to me, and then I try to work around how can I get to this moment from the beginning and after, and then try to connect the dots of those moments in visualization or magic or origami, and then fit into it. That's kind of my process.
So you're looking for the soul of the piece.
Yeah, you say really articulately. Yes, that's what I'm trying to do. Yeah, because for me, I want to see, when I see a story or performance, I want to see a wow moment.
Yeah.
That's where like the core of the story or soul of the story, art, lives there. So
let's talk about art and entertainment. I mean, you're kind of talking about both here. You're being very artistic, and yet you need to present it in an entertaining way. How can we stay artistic and be entertaining at the same time?
Yeah, this is such a, I think, a dilemma sometimes for me, because for me, art is something bringing up the artist's voice, come out like the unique voice that lives in us. But on the other hand, entertainment is like, you want to have audiences in mind.
Sure.
Is this what I do will please the audiences? Or it doesn't have to be please, but can I get the connection doing this? But that kind of mindset really destroys art. For art, it doesn't have to have that connection.
Yeah.
I think primary goal of the art is to express their unique voice. So like sometimes if you go to the museum, you don't have to like all the art pieces, because they're not primarily made to connect with everyone. But I feel like entertainment is on opposite end. You will think like what the majority of people would like.
Right.
So in the process, sometimes I fell into the hole of like, oh, people will like it, so I will do it. But it's not coming from my authentic place of my inner artistic soul.
Sure.
Sometimes I have conflict, but I want to do both. Like, and lots of great, you know, performer does both. That's what I'm searching for.
Like, yeah, the great performer has a piece of art or performance art that is also entertaining to the audience that they mix. Yeah,
I agree. I totally agree. Yeah, I try to, you know, make it without the judgment if people like it or not, and then first, and then try to adapt to it more. How can I make it entertaining without losing that core authenticity?
So tell me about, what is a bento rakugo?
Ah,
am I saying that right?
Yes, you're saying it perfectly. Bento rakugo is, when I was in grad school, my focus was adapting traditional Asian theater form for American audiences. University of Hawaii had the guest artists come in all the time from Asia and then teach us traditional Asian theater form. I focus on this one Japanese rakugo theater style, which is, rakugo is like solo storytelling, that storyteller sit on zabuton cushion and tell the story using pantomiming, becoming all the character from the first person, second person, and also there's a narrator too, but using a Japanese fan and Japanese towel as a prop. So Japanese fan can become a chopstick, a Japanese towel can become like a wallet. So that's, rakugo theater was developed same time as kabuki. Yeah, I made this troupe, and then we tour around the libraries, library schools and festivals around Hawaii Islands.
Now, are you using just the one prop?
Actually, so there's a two prop, Japanese fan and Japanese towel. It's very minimalistic theater. So that becomes, use like lots of imagination to fill in like what that object can become, you know.
Right.
And also they sit on the zabuton as a, I don't know if you know the Japanese way of like sitting like seiza style.
Yeah.
You just have upper body to show the physicalization.
Wow.
Please look into rakugo, and there's couple rakugo performers in United States. One of them were doing, before the COVID, doing off-Broadway show. Yeah, this rakugo form is a comedy. So it's really interesting sometimes translating Japanese comedy. Sometimes wordplay in Japanese doesn't work translated in English script.
I'm sure we can find a number of those performances on YouTube, probably, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Bento Rakugo has a couple links.
And Bento Rakugo is just so yes. people can look it up on YouTube, Bento Rakugo.
Yes.
Bento Rakugo. That's cool. Now we're going to move on to fact or something John just made up. Does that sound like fun?
Sounds fun.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to give you a headline, and you're going to tell me whether it's true or not. And if it is true, tell me a little more about it.
Okay.
First headline. When Yasu was in graduate school, he wrote research papers in crayons.
It is true.
It is true.
Yes. So I was studying, I was in the Master of Fine Arts program for Theater for Young Audiences. The first Theater for Young Audiences class, I wrote the papers in crayon.
Oh.
Gave it to the professor.
I'll bet that stood out.
Yeah. Yeah, he remembered my name. He called me to the office and I had to explain and I just, and then he was so nice enough. He let me write a paper again, but he immediately remembered my name.
Well, yeah, I would think so if you wrote it in crayon. Actually, that's not a horrible idea.
Yeah, I'm so glad the professor was very nice and playful.
All right, next headline. Yasu performed in English before he performed in Japanese.
True.
True?
Yes.
What?
I never perform in Japanese. In Japan, first of all, in Japan, there's no drama classes at high school or junior high school or even college.
Mm.
Okay, maybe one or two college has a drama major. Other than that, people really don't act or perform so much.
Oh.
Maybe if you go to high school, maybe they have drama club or something like that. I never perform, and I saw Patch Adams, and I just wow, this is so great. And then on that same week, I saw English Rakugo performance on Osaka. And I just wow, this is so cool. But I never made connection about it. But then I get to learn about this English Rakugo performer. He got me into the performing in English. And then I started the English comedy club in my junior college in Japan. Yeah, that's how I got started. So I never perform in Japanese. I still never perform in Japanese.
Oh, is that... So let me ask you then, in Japan, people start learning the arts or the theatrical arts after high school?
So actually, they never perform theatrical art. There's no drama classes at college either.
Oh.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, am I misunderstanding? There's a lot of theater in Japan, isn't there?
There is a theater. So if you live in big cities like in Tokyo or Osaka, you can go to a training studio. There's art actor studio that you can go to get training. But that's not something that we learn. I never knew anything about drama until I came to the theater program in United States.
Wow.
So, lots of people started as the community theater. So if you go to Tokyo, Osaka, big cities, there's a big community theater. So they get to learn about it. But I lived in countryside, so I didn't really have the opportunity, or I never thought. I'm a very shy person, so an introvert. So I never thought about performing in front of people.
Until you came to the United States, right?
Until Patch Adams inspired me.
All right, next headline. Yasu's artist visa costs around $5,000 every time he renews.
True.
Five, that, is that a year?
For a year. I don't do artistic visa anymore, but I used to do artistic visa every year until I got the green card. Immigration process is not really made out for artists. I paid a couple grand for a lawyer, and then I think the application fee is cost more than like I think close to $2,000.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really hard to renew every year because on top of that you have to do like maybe 100 to 200 pages document, and including you have to have the booking 1.5 ahead of you. It's really difficult. I mean, I got so much of help from my mentors, my performer friends, but it's almost impossible for young artists to come here and get artist visa and then keep staying financially. Yeah, it's a really bad system for younger immigrants artists to stay in the United States. I met so many artists that they had to go back to their country because they couldn't renew their artist visa, or there was no sponsor. They couldn't find any sponsor for their artist visa.
Interesting. So you have to have a sponsor and you also have to have some bookings? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and also, 100, 200 pages of documents that you are, legit performer. So you have to, if you're probably a magician, you can get those letters from maybe Magic Castle or IBM or SAM.
Yeah.
I went to storytelling route, so National Storytelling Network wrote me a letter about he's a legit. But for that, I think I paid that money. So it's cost more than $5,000 a year.
Wow.
John, I really struggled. There was a time I always thought, I have to go back to Japan. But every time something like that happened, some help came in and then I get to manage it. But yeah, I was so close going back to Japan.
Well, I'm glad you didn't. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you. Thank you, John.
We can learn a lot from you.
Thank you.
Next headline. This is the last one. Last headline.
Okay.
Iwasu proposed to his wife at a music festival.
True.
True. Tell me a little bit about that. I think if I remember correctly,
Yeah.
there's some video on that too, right?
Yeah. Wow. Yes. You know about this. So my wife is a writer. She was doing a panel at the Hawaii Book Music Festival. I was the featured performer, the kids performer there. So I was, at that point, I wanted to get married to her. So I was touring Hawaii, and then my last gig, I did maybe in that tour, I did maybe 35 shows in Hawaii. And then last, for 3 weeks, I finished all the gigs until she comes, and then we will spend a week in Hawaii. That was our plan. I did the two stage show on their kids stage, and I proposed her on the second show on the stage. But the first show, after I got connected with kids, I told kids like, "Oh, I'm going to propose to my girlfriend." And then kids just got like, "Do you think yes? Do you think she's going to say yes?" So I said, "I don't know." And then the kids said, "Uh-oh." So kids gather around on the second show, and kids said, "Yasu needs support and help." So we just go to support. So first row, second row was the kids from the first show
Huh?
who saw my show, and then they were anxiously waiting, like if my girlfriend would say yes or no. I brought her to the stage, and then I told the story, and then I proposed. But when she said yes, the kids in the first row just jump up and said, "She said yes. Yes was saved." So I'm,
Yay!
yeah.
That was fact or something John just made up.
Would you like some fan questions there, Yasu?
Yes, I would love to.
Okay. Giuseppe Riano, aka Joe Self, says Yasu is so creative. I love the way he incorporates origami into his performances. I have also enjoyed how he passes out pieces of paper and teaches the audience how to fold an origami piece. So, with that in mind, I would like to know if he is doing virtual shows, and if so, is he teaching origami to his audience, and how does he go about doing that?
Thank you, Joe, for kind words. First of all, I use multiple cameras. I teach them how to turn into a normal paper into the square paper. So you can, I always say, like, you can use notebook paper or copy paper. You can totally make it a square paper and with scissors and cut it into to turn into the square paper.
So they come prepared with either notebook paper or whatever paper they have.
Yeah.
And I looked at your Facebook page, by the way,
Oh, thank you.
there's some instruction. You can follow some of the videos and actually create some origami from your Facebook page.
Yes, please, please do. I left my last two, I think, library show up there. So if you want to see, my library show has like a storytelling parts and also origami teaching part. You get the two in one show.
Well, this podcast will be like an interactive podcast. You can go to Yasu's Facebook. You can learn some origami.
Yay!
What else do you want? All right. Next question. Joe Goslin, who is a magician and founder of The Joe Show, asks, what is the most complicated origami creation you can make, and how many steps is it?
Oh, so thank you so much for the question, Joe. You know what? If Joe was the origami folder, maybe I might disappoint him. I'm not technical origami artist, so most difficult one I made was it's called Kawasaki Rose. Kawasaki Rose has probably 40 steps. You create eight square on each side, so it's going to be a 64 squares inside. You twist one by one to make rows, and it's really, really hard for me. But I think that's the most difficult things I made. It's kind of takes hours to finish that row.
So we have some sort of comparison. What is a super, super hard origami? How many steps would that be for something really, really hard?
I think there is like, if you look for like really difficult origami in like the books, it's like maybe like 10 pages.
Oh.
Yeah, 10 pages of like steps into it. So really complicated model goes to, I believe, probably 100 steps or so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Annie Banani, we know Annie Banani, right?
Yes, Anya, we love Anya.
Everybody loves
Yes,
Annie. We always talk
yes.
about every time I bring up her name, I say Annie Banani says, and
Yeah.
whoever I'm talking to says, "Oh, I love Annie Banani."
She has such a kind soul.
She does. She does. All right. She's one of the top balloon artists in the country. She asks, "Do you have a kids club set up where you can build your fan base? I'd love to hear details."
You know what? That's really great question, and I always wanted to work on. This summer, I started my performance page because of the virtual things, and some of the kids, I think the audiences who saw that show subscribe, not subscribe, but likes my page. So that's kind of right now, but I want to start. In North Carolina, there is a really good of my friend Clark Sides, and he's a balloon and a magician, balloon artist and magician, and he does something like that, and he always tell me like, yeah. Build a fan base, build a fan base, and I always like, yeah, I want to do it, I want to do it, and I keep forgetting. So that's a great suggestion. Thank you so much, Anya. I will totally.
It's a good suggestion. Haven't started it
Yeah.
yet, but I Facebook has kind of replaced the kids club nowadays for the fan base, huh?
Oh, you think so?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I know lots of audiences liked my page from my virtual show in library. But I wanted to have, where kids can go and then have the fan base. That's, I think, amazing tips as a kids performer.
All right, her second question. She has two questions. Her second question
Okay.
says, also, and I love this question. It's something that I would have asked earlier, but she asked it, so I saved it. Here we go. I'd love to hear a story or two about how you incorporate your Japanese heritage into your shows and how we can find that one thing about ourselves that might make us able to share something meaningful with our audiences.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, wait, while you're thinking, she says, P.S., I love your shows.
Thank you, Annie. Thank you.
All right, so
Some
some
kind words.
stories how you incorporate your Japanese heritage into your shows.
Yeah, so I grew up with grandma telling me lots of stories, And grandma really, you know, gave me lots of books about the stories. Not only Japanese story, but like lots of Western classic, like O. Henry was one of them she gave, and I loved O. Henry's short stories. But I think lots of the stories when I was growing up here from heard from grandma, yeah, lots of the stories I do is from like my childhood when I heard and I loved it. I sometimes create, John, do you know Kendama?
Say it again?
Kendama.
I don't think I do.
It's a Japanese traditional toy or game, whatever, depends on what you call it. But it's kind of like a wooden, they have a ball attached to this wooden stick, and then and wooden stick has a cup into it, and then you put the ball.
The ball has a string on it?
And yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you toss the ball, or you, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah. You toss the ball into the, you try to get it into the little cup.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a Japanese traditional game, and I this summer I made that story about the samurai who wants to catch the sun.
Mm.
Based on the kendama, and then so I do kind of like do get the inspiration from Japanese props, and they make a fictional story based on the historical facts. But also I look into the traditional route, learn from a Japanese folktale, and then translate it and adapt it into my style.
All right, those are all the fan questions I have for you, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you for everyone asking for wonderful questions.
That was very nice. Joe and Joe. And Annie Banani.
Thank you.
And thank you, Yasu, for doing my show. That was fun.
Thank you, John. It was so much fun talking with you.
Oh, wait. Before I let you go, I forgot to ask. You're doing something with the National Storytelling Network. What are you doing with them?
Yes, I'm on the board of National Storytelling Network Youth Educators and Storytellers Alliance group. And everyone is welcome to join the organization. We do once in 3 months, we invite storytellers to give a lecture about their specialty.
It's called the National Storytelling Network. So someone can join up if they want to.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, thank you again, Yasu, for doing my show.
Thank you so much. Thank you, John.
Thanks to all my Variety artists. Tell all your friends about the Variety Artist Podcast. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.